David Coleman joining us in studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
So there you are. That little bit of Mars dancing you did on the as you tiptoed through the door this morning was brilliant.
Yeah, it's impressive, isn't it?
It is impressive because I know you like bridge, but I didn't realise Mars dancing would be an offshoot of your skills.
Well, when I saw you doing your singing and dancing on Friday night, I thought I better try and do my little bit, but thankfully it's radio.
I tell you something, I had to do some serious rehearsal for that with Stuart and David, because they were sitting there going, are you able for this? And I said, I don't know. I was mortified doing it in front of them, and they said, "No, they said you can do this. If you want to do it, you can do it. You need to embrace it." Because I was actually embarrassed. I was embarrassed for myself, and I was embarrassed for my family. And at the point
well, you
I was,
didn't need to be.
Thanks, David. You're very good. Yes, you had a good weekend. Otherwise, I hope, apart from the trauma of the toy show.
Well, we didn't.
No,
really,
what happened?
No. Well, two things. I suppose my wife's uncle died.
So I'm sorry to hear that. That's awful.
And then our cat died. Got knocked over on Sunday at night time
or daytime?
No, I think it was early in the morning on Sunday morning, and thankfully people spotted and moved it off the road, but I had to go and pick the cat up from the ditch bury the cat in the dark last night before I came up to Dublin.
Did you have a sort of informal ceremony?
We had a little gathering. Yeah, we have about 7 cats now buried in our...
I'm not dwelling on your wife's uncle, by the way, because I think that's very personal.
I know.
I'm not trying to be
facetious. No, it's fine, but yeah, no, with the cats, so we have many cats now buried, so we have a whole little kind of cat goodbye thing going.
How do kids take that whole business of the cat going?
Oh, it's really upsetting. It doesn't really matter. And I mean, this kitten, I have to say, I mean, he was only about a year old, I'd say, and he was by far and away the nicest cat we've ever had. Yeah, I don't like cats particularly.
Yeah.
But I really liked this one. And wasn't a great weekend, really.
Tragic. There was a lot of sadness in there. And of course, now it's December 2nd, and it's very charged. I mean, even at the toy show thing on Thursday and Friday, and there were some acts, and some of the kids had their own sorrows and troubles in their lives that only I was aware of, and some of the team. And to see them like performing and battling away, just, oh my God, it's a humbling place to be sometimes, and December does that to a man.
Well, it's
woman.
Funny. I mean, I was only writing a piece for The Independent, which I'm not sure whether they go out next week or the week after, but just about the whole kind of the potential stress that's there for families coming up to Christmas.
Sure.
And I was just thinking, I mean, I hate the winter. I have to say, I don't find anything.
Well,
good
we've
about
told
it.
you have a little seasonal adjustment disorder.
I definitely do.
Definitely.
I definitely have a little something going on. But Christmas is about the only thing that kind of lifts it, you know, because it's just, you know, the turn has happened. Like the 21st, you know, the day started in theory get longer after the 21st.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you got Christmas, and it's like finally, okay, we can start to breathe again or something. I don't know. Yeah.
No, I agree with you. And then
I hate the dark.
How's January for you?
January I love because you can feel it getting brighter. It's to do with the light and the dark. I had our globe down. I don't know why our globe was down. Normally it's up on a high shelf in the sitting room, but it was down, and I was just looking at where Ireland is on the globe, and I thought, you know, we really are that far north. You forget about how far north we are. And I was just looking at things like the Faroe Islands and Norway and Greenland, thinking, I wouldn't be able to live any further north. I'm about as far north as I can go.
I think it was about 4:10 yesterday, the dark. And do you know what? The dark doesn't, you know, gently come in at night time. Mm. It drops like a ton. It just, bing, someone turns off the light up in the heaven. It's mad. Yeah. Well, we're going to start with a call, today, which is from Sarah, who's on the line there. Good morning to you, Sarah.
Morning.
Are you
Hi,
well?
Ryan. Hi, David.
Hi,
good,
Sarah.
Thanks.
How are you?
And you have a little girl, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. She's 3 and a half.
All right. And what's ailing her?
She's afraid. She keeps getting upset and keeps saying that she's afraid that she's going to become a giant because she's very tall for her age, and it's always commented on by people that we meet, and so there's no way of getting away from that. But it's like she just keeps saying, I don't want to get any taller, I don't want to become a giant. And
what height is she now, Sarah?
I don't know exactly what height she is now, but like she would be taller than most of the kids in her, she'd be taller than all the kids in her class, and she'd be like, we have a nephew who's 6 months older than her, and she'd be a whole head higher than him, you know. But she's starting to sort of say things about eating her food now. It's like, I don't want to eat all my dinner in case I become a giant. And, Mammy, don't you finish all your dinner in case you become a giant.
Okay.
So that's the bit that's worrying me, because I don't want her to sort of get a complex at 3 and a half about food, you know.
It is striking.
Yeah.
It is striking sometimes when you see a school photograph and the kids are all lined up and one poor kid. And I say poor kid because it is not easy if you are... Mm. if you're much like a whole, you know, head and shoulders, if not more, a bow taller than other children. So it's one of those things.
Yeah. Can I interrupt? Sorry now, Sarah, because I was just struck by how I was at a talk there recently about sexual health and development and so on, and they were just showing pictures of, you know, the same age children, and these are all kind of maybe 9-year-olds and 10-year-olds and 14-year-olds and so on. And it really is striking just the different rates at which children develop. So, you know, in some ways, unfortunately for your daughter, there's very little she can do about it. And I suppose the message you really want to give is that her final height is already planned. It's already in her genes. Now, I don't quite know how you managed to persuade a 3.5-year-old that there's little enough she can do about it at this stage, because you're absolutely right. You don't want her to associate it, to feel like she has some control over it, that if she doesn't eat or if she eats less or something, that it will stunt her growth in some way, because you actually want her just to feel like she's going to grow and this is the way it's going to be. I guess maybe I don't know whether is it you or your husband that's tall, that might be
both of you are
okay. So what you can do perhaps is look around and say, you know, the chances are you're going to be as tall as me or tall as your auntie or tall as somebody else within the family who's you know, probably of you know, maybe slightly above average height then, I'd guess, by the sounds of it. Are you?
Well, I'm about 5'10 and my husband's 6'3.
Okay.
That's
yeah,
tall.
Yeah. Yeah. But so, you know, so, yeah, I don't really know what to say to you, because there's so little you can do about it other than, you know, I suppose, listen, the one thing I do know from my experience is that it's very hard to reassure children when they feel that you don't really get how distressing this is for them. So that might be about all you can do at this stage, is just listen to her carefully, acknowledge that this is something she worries about, and then reassure her that actually she will probably be about 5'10". You will probably be the same height as me, and it doesn't really matter what you eat or what you drink along the way. This is the height you're going to be, because that's what your genes tell you you're going to be. And but that reassurance will probably fall on deaf ears unless she feels you really get it, you know, that sense that you really understand just and how difficult it is for her. And sometimes when children have their fears or their anxieties acknowledged, simply it's enough that they don't have to cling on to them themselves then.
Yeah, okay.
Well, try that, Sarah, and see how you get on.
I will.
And if it's not working, come back to us and we'll see what we can do for you.
I will, okay. Thanks a million.
Listen, look after yourself. Thanks so much.
Okay, thanks, bye. Bye.
David, at what age are teenagers, asks Anne, able to make adult decisions, emotional decisions also?
Oh, well, again, that's really how long is a piece of string, because you will find that teenagers come into their maturity at such different ages. And, you know, so 2 15-year-olds are not alike at all emotionally necessarily. I mean, they may be, but in chances are they're quite different. So really you have to judge it according to your child. And I suppose the circumstances that that prevail as well, because sometimes when we think about adult decisions, so I'm trying to think of the kind of adult decision, maybe it's about, say for example, parents are separated. And it's like, well, you know, at what stage can a teenager really choose to live with their mum or live with their dad as their kind of their own personal choice? And at what stage might we still be saying to them, well, look, you know, on the balance, we think it's best if you live with your mum, or we think it's best if you live with your dad. But, you know, so really you have to judge it by them. And I suppose the key thing really is to give them opportunities to make choices in advance of the big choices. So let them make smaller choices. Let them take some responsibility for other things in their lives before they have to make the big choices. That way they get a bit of practice at it, they're better at it, and they realize that the choices that they make have consequences, and that sometimes it's really about planning for the consequences. I'm a big fan as well with children. Sometimes they will make mistakes, of course they will, because they're human. So rather than trying to protect them so much that they don't have to make a choice and make a mistake, sometimes it's okay, let them make the choice and let there be some kind of a fallback position if you can at all. So so if it is what you might consider to be an adult choice that they're making, just make sure that they know that if it all goes pear-shaped, that you're still there for them. That's maybe the other key bit to give them.
All right, okay. So plenty more coming in. We'll get to them all in a moment.
Podcast this show now
on the RT Radio Player
or at 2fm.ie.
Tubridy on 2FM.
51552 is the text number. David Coleman live in studio with us this morning. I met a fellow, we had been in Brown Thomas last week, and he was talking about a thing they're doing for the homeless, and he gave me a note about it, and I've forgotten the note. I'll do it tomorrow in case he's listening. Caroline is on the line now as well. Hi, Caroline.
Hi, good morning.
Are you well today?
I am. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. You have a 4.5-year-old. Is that right?
I do.
And
I do. My middle child.
Yeah.
She started school in September, and she is, well, ever since the get-go, getting dressed in the uniform is, to say the least, a bone of contention, and it hasn't really got any better. Like, it's now December. It started off the tights. She didn't like the feeling of the tights. I suppose feeling restricted in the tights, so I've turned them inside out because she had a real issue with the seam on the toes. Like, that really, you know, irked her. And then it was the collar, the tie, particularly the cuffs. The cuffs then, when the cardigan went on, that was another, you know, kind of... Anyway, the whole thing's like snowballs, really. And I'm just kind of exhausted at the end of the morning before the day has really, you know, really commenced at all. And then not only that, but when it comes to dropping her to school, you know, they line up in their lines before the teacher comes and takes in the group. And then kind of four times out of five, she'll start this, she'll cling to me. No, don't go, Mummy. I don't want you to go. And so I kind of have to, you know, walk her into her classroom. And then, oh, sorry now, Ryan and David. I have another
it's
little
the 20-month-old that does this.
Yeah,
smells the phone call.
Yeah, I know. Even though I'm here supplying him with rice cakes and whatnot and stuff. Probably not cutting it, probably because they're rice cakes, actually. But anyway, and this morning my neighbour took her to school, and then at the front door the whole thing kicked off again. No, Mummy, you know, you have to take me. And now, and I know she's fine, because once she gets in the door to the classroom, she's fine, and she's in good form when I collect her from school and all of that, but it's just the getting dressed thing that I've really, I don't know where to go with this.
Has it been going on since September, literally back to school?
Literally from September. Now, she always has been kind of pernickety about clothes, I suppose, and doesn't like the feeling of anything which she perceives as, you know, obviously they'll fit her, but she'd be like, no, this is, you know, not right, or, you know, something in any way tight. So I don't know if it's a kind of claustrophobia, what it is, but it's really annoying. Like, I've bought her stuff recently, and she just like refuses to.
Sounds like a bit of a horror show now, in fairness.
Well, yeah. It is, because it's very, you know, and I mean I'm trying to be endlessly patient with her, and you know, I know that she's middle child, and sometimes, you know, people kind of think maybe you're a little bit less patient with the middle child. So I'm really trying, but it's very frustrating. And at the same time, especially on a school morning, because you have to get them to school by a certain time, and it slows the whole process.
You see that tether over there in the corner of your kitchen? You're at the end of it.
I am. I have an 8-year-old as well.
I can hear it in your voice. David Coleman, save this woman's sanity, please.
Caroline, hi, how are you doing?
I'm fine.
That's such a lovely Irishism,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes,
I know you aren't fine, really, but I thought I'd ask, and you told me you were. But no, Caroline, do you know what? I suppose there's a couple of things going on. One, you know, your daughter might actually have some stuff going on in terms of her sensory perception of stuff, and actually she might just find that certain fabrics, or, as you say, you know, a sense of restriction, that it really is, you know, very uncomfortable for her.
Right.
Now,
right.
I don't know to what extent the uniform is adaptable, whether there are things you can do to it to make it more comfortable for her. So that's one avenue to explore. Or sometimes what parents find is that perhaps if they put almost like a layer of cotton, you know, so that they might wear like a long sleeve cotton t-shirt underneath the uniform. And sometimes that helps with sensory issues. But I suppose the bigger thing perhaps may be that the uniform now has just become linked for her with the idea that she doesn't want to go to school, or that she finds going to school stressful. And it does sound like she has an element of separation anxiety, which is, again, quite a natural thing. And I guess she probably has a sense that she's leaving her, obviously, is it a little brother or sister behind her?
He's 20 months almost, Samuel.
So it may be like, what, you know, why does he get to stay home and I have to go to this school? And as you say, once she gets there, she's fine, because she's actually happily distracted and busy.
She does. And my older daughter is in second class, so like she's going off with her in the morning as well.
Yeah.
Which you know, this is what I thought. I thought she'll look forward to going now, because at least, you know, she sees Ruby going to school as well, and you know, it doesn't seem to make any difference. Yeah.
No, but I think if you talk to her, I mean, she's only 4.5, so I guess, you know, she may not necessarily be able to express things particularly eloquently yet, or articulately. So talk to her instead, and give her lots of guesses about what you think might be up in terms of missing you, not enjoying the fact that her little brother gets to stay home, not really liking the feeling of the uniform, but isn't it a shame you have to wear it anyway? So just, again, loads and loads of empathy. It always works to really reduce the behaviour? Because a lot of the time children, you know, kick up such a fuss because they just want us to know that they're not enjoying the experience or that they're finding it hard. And when they know that we find that we understand that they find it hard, then they don't need to show us as much. So I do think that will make a difference for her.
A couple of tips here too from listeners. Maybe have helped. We use navy in our school, and instead of tights, I use leggings and long socks instead.
Okay.
And another says, tell the lady on the phone the tights can be bought in Next. They sell seamless tights there. My daughter was there with all these things. And it can represent, as David rightly says, separation anxiety. So, you know, there's three suggestions, rather useful.
Okay.
Leggings,
yeah,
I've kind of
overcome the tights thing because by turning them, but turning them inside out. Actually, that I did mention it to her teacher, and she suggested... She gave me that suggestion, which has been helpful for the tights, to turn them inside out so the seam is on the outside. Yeah. It's the shirt in particular, the cuffs. She has a major issue with the cuffs, and then the cardigan going on, so it's the double cuff, I suppose, effect or impact. Sets her off. It's like to witness it must be.
You could just cut the cuffs off the shirt. I mean, it's not like the cuffs are necessary, you know?
I know.
I mean, if it is that feeling of that she can't move her arms freely or whatever, but to be honest,
I think it's a bit of
a red herring anyway. I actually think part of her complaint is just about the fact that she has to go to school at all. And it is that sense of, you know, why does she have to go? Her little brother doesn't have to go. She misses you perhaps and just would rather be at home to, you know, part of the whatever's going on at home that she may feel she's missing out on. So talk to her about that. The fact that she might be missing out on stuff, and you know, it's hard to think about, you know, what you might be doing when she's not there. And I think then what you'll find is that she will actually kind of almost smooth out a little bit. She'll ease out a little bit and won't need to fuss as much. I think you'll still get a bit of fussing, but it will. And usually, in fairness to children, you know, they do eventually they get to the point where they have to kind of suck it up and acknowledge it. Yeah, I do have to go to school, and it's not going to change. And they get over themselves and they just go at that point.
I know. It feels like I'm kind of amazed that at this stage she hasn't, you know, really just, you know, she's not in the habits. It doesn't seem, and now I'm always thinking, I'm kind of looking forward to the Christmas break, and at the same time I'm going, my God, does that mean now after 2 weeks off she'll be even worse?
You'll never get her back. You will get her back.
Is that a thing? You know, the way, like, she was four, I suppose, you know, the end of May, and there would have been some people who would have held her back for another...
waited
until she was five. Like, it's, but I mean, she's very articulate. She can express herself. She's more than capable. But I suppose maybe emotionally, socially, I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think that's always the big issue when it comes to children going to school and that difference between being four and five.
Okay.
And it's not necessarily their intellectual capacity or their ability to learn. Usually it is their ability to actually function in that group, you know. But sure, look, you know, you pay your money, you take your chances. Sometimes you just have to do what you think is right. And
I know. Well, teacher hasn't, you know, she hasn't kind of called me in
Once she gets into the classroom, she's obviously a good kid.
Even though there's been mornings where the teacher has literally had to, you know, drag her off, like, from me at the door. But she says it stops, like,
it's a performance for you, you know, and even the whole, the school clothes might be a bit of a performance as well. So maybe be, you know, kind of matter of fact, bit of empathy, bit of matter of fact, and just keep going.
We have to leave it there. Caroline, listen, I hope that all works out as much as possible for you. So look after yourself. Have a lovely Christmas.
You too. Thanks a lot.
Take care. Not at all. Thank you so much for calling. It's really important that you do so. And David, we'll talk to you before Christmas, of course.
You will.
When are you getting the tree?
Actually, probably the weekend before. We're middle of December.
You're one
of
the trees. That's okay.
It's a real tree and it dies, you know, so.
Okay, obviously. Thanks for that. David Coleman.
I meant.
Find us on Facebook. 2FM Official.